Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
A city that makes itself a better place for artists becomes a better place for everybody who lives there. In Dallas, some of the credit for that evolution belongs to Vicky Meek, a sculptor, curator, and educator who for 19 years has brought innovative programs and ideas to the South Dallas Cultural Center and nurtured the working artists who expand and challenge our ideas of who we are and what we can become. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Vicky Meek is preparing to retire after 19 years there, having transformed it from an easily overlooked outpost adjoining Fair Park to a thriving hub within the community, partnering with organizations throughout North Texas and around the country with a special focus on the Black experience. Her many admirers will be sad to see her go and have planned a long weekend of events celebrating her ongoing legacy. We were eager to hear her thoughts on her career thus far, what she's achieved and what she is planning for the future, and we are delighted she could make time to join us today. Vicky, welcome back to Think.
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm delighted to be here.
So we were talking about this before, but why now? Why choose this moment?
A lot of reasons. I think the biggest reason is that I kind of feel like I've done everything I ever wanted to do at the center. The last piece being put in place last year, which was to create a friends group for the center, a 501c3, to support it. And so I'm not one of those people who thinks that, you know, you got to die in the job. I've been preparing next generation folks to do the work, and it was time to say goodbye and turn it over to them.
We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but I want to go back to what your impressions were of Dallas when you first arrived here. What's your most intense memory of this is my new hometown?
Well, I mean, I'm going to preface this by saying I love my new city, my adopted home. I will say that first because I didn't love it when I moved here in 1980. Of course, 1980, it was very different. Mm-hmm. It was a major cultural change from what I was used to. I come from the East Coast and had, you know, a whole lot of activity, of arts activity going on. And it was a lot of arts activity across cultural lines. So here I found that it was very stratified, very segregated, not a lot of activity on the level that I was used to either, you know. So it was a shock. I slept for a year and, you know, didn't get out of bed for a while. And then when I decided to get out of bed, I said, you know what? This isn't so bad because I can make something happen if I want it to happen. And that's kind of what I've led my life doing here is this, you know, make some stuff happen. You don't like it, make some changes. That's what I've been doing.
So when you looked around at the way Dallas understood art when you made that decision to go ahead and engage here, what did you see? What was the people who were involved with the arts here? What did they value in 1980?
Well, mostly tradition. That's what I found a lot of, is that there was not a lot of interest in innovation at that time. Not necessarily opposition to it, but just not a lot of things happening that I saw that were very innovative. But there was an openness. I felt there was an openness to at least hear some other ideas. And I wasn't here long before I actually became a part of the city government, because at that time the city arts program was happening. When I came here, I came as an artist because I was going to never do arts administration again when I came from Connecticut. You know, I'd worked for a state arts agency and it was like, ah, forget it. I'm never doing that again. Never say never. So I became a part of an organization that had actually funded me as a CETA artist when Jerry Allen came to town and took over the city arts program. When he came, they got him because he was an innovator. He came from Seattle. You know, he had done wonderful things out there. He came and got me because he knew about the work that I did in Connecticut. And between the two of us, because really it was only like a three-person staff in the beginning, we were able, in a very short period of time, to get the city government to think differently about the arts. I mean, we're talking about initiating a public art program, a percent for art program that was better than, like, anybody else at the time. Because at that time, you know, Dallas had money.
Mm-hmm. Dallas still has some money. Are you talking about the city?
No, I'm talking about the city.
Okay.
Had money. We had a lot of it. and didn't know necessarily what to do with it. So Jerry and I decided we were going to spend it. So we didn't get a lot of resistance to the ideas that we had. I mean, like, I started this program called Art Picks, which was the first time that artists were able to get funding so that they could do performances and, you know, artwork and exhibition. They got paid to do exhibitions around town and what have you. I mean, who would have thought that would have happened? But anyway, they didn't say no. And it's when we started a lot of the programs that you now have in place to fund somebody other than the major institutions. Because when I got here, those are the only people who got money. So, you know, it was a very exciting time in a lot of ways and a frustrating time in a lot of ways. Because as fast as we were doing all of that kind of work, I didn't see the same kind of growth happening where artists of color and organizations of color were concerned. So we were working hard to try to get, you know, some awareness brought to the idea of diversity on boards and in programming and on staffs and that kind of thing. So it was like, you know, all this was going on at the same time we were building an arts infrastructure.
Was the idea that artists of color were producing work that was only relevant to audiences of color?
I think that's the thought that was pervasive at the time. And it's not, quite frankly, a whole lot different now. Mm-hmm. But yes, that was part of the hurdle that we had to get over. The other part of the hurdle that we had to get over was the idea that the cultural offerings of communities of color were as valuable as the mainstream. I mean, that's still the conversation we're having, is cultural equity. Because people mistake cultural equity for cultural diversity, and it's not the same conversation at all. So that's, you know, that's kind of the climate that existed in the 80s. And then, you know, as time went on, we got more and more programming, more and more organizations, more and more activity. And, you know, Dallas has got a lot going on at this time.
A few years ago, you said you still had to go to the East Coast to get theater, really good African-American theater. Has anything changed?
I still do that. I will be honest. I still do that. I think that it's been a hard row for the theater community in the African-American community here, because the kind of money you need to produce the kind of theater that I'm used to. I mean, I grew up in a Negro ensemble and, you know, they're kind of hard to beat. Mm-hmm. But the kind of money that's involved in theater, you can't skimp on theater and get that quality. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I was so adamant about when we supported Jonathan Norton at the Center to do Mississippi Goddamn, that he have the money to do the production he envisioned. So that's still, we've got a little ways to go with that.
For someone who would grow up to be an arts administrator and an artist, it sounds like you just had a really idyllic childhood. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Idyllic. Whew.
Well, your parents were really into art.
Well, they were big art supporters, you know. And I grew up, I'll tell you, I was lucky that I grew up in the city that I grew up in, because the city of Philadelphia in the 1950s and 60s, because I was a child in the 50s, we had so many opportunities for free, high quality arts instruction. I mean, I did my visual arts instruction from the time I was 8 until the time I graduated from high school at Fleischer Memorial Art School. Any artist in Philadelphia that's doing anything, you ask them, that's where they went as a child. The faculty at that place were the art faculty of the art institutions around the city. So, you know, like Moore College of Art, Philadelphia College of Art, Tyler School of Art, all of those people were teaching us kids at Fleischer. So that's where my visual arts instruction started. I did my dance instruction at Settlement Music School, which was not too far away from there. And once again, you know, high quality. They had music, dance, and I think they had theater there as well.
Were your parents always really supportive of your
anything,
arts goals?
Anything we ever thought we wanted to do in the arts, they made sure there was an opportunity for us to try it. I mean, like, for instance, my brother, who is a jazz pianist now, he thought he wanted to play the trombone. So they, you know, allowed him to do that. Of course, his arms were a little too short, so that didn't work out. So, I mean, he tried several instruments before he settled on piano. I wanted to dance, and I wanted to do visual art. So they found those places for me. Both of my sisters did the same thing. And then the other brother, I'm not sure. Dennis did something. I don't know. He didn't stay. He became an architect and then got out of that. But so anything we wanted to do, they were willing to find a resource for it.
Five kids in your family. Was there healthy competition to be like the best artist in the family?
No. There was never. I've never had any competitive nature about me with my siblings. Everybody else, yes, but not my siblings. When people talk about sibling rivalry, I don't know what that is because we never had it. So, you know, we all supported each other. We still do. It's like we're our best cheerleaders. The Meeks are our best cheerleaders.
And you've been a cheerleader throughout your career for other artists. I wonder about the energy that you give to arts administration and to mentoring and the energy that is required to create your own work and how you've decided to sort of, you know, divide that up.
Well, what I found for me is that mentoring other artists is not a problem. Teaching is a problem. And that's why I got out of teaching. Teaching milked the exact same energy it takes for me to create art. But the mentoring doesn't. I mean, it's sort of like having a colleague who doesn't quite know as much as you do. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, you're not really giving them everything you've got like you do when you teach. But you're sharing information, you know, you're helping them make decisions, you know, you're guiding them in terms of the kinds of things that they might be exploring. You're talking about their aesthetic. It's a little bit different in terms of the energy for me. And it's something that I guess I've always done. I my mother says that I was like mentoring my friends when I was a little kid. You know. Anyway.
So was it about teaching? Is it almost like does it feel like a performance to you?
Well, it is. I took teaching very seriously. I mean, you know, I guess I could have maybe taught with a little less energy, but I don't know how. Mm-hmm. So my thing is if I don't know how and I don't know how to pull back, then I need to stop. But for me, it's the thinking part. You know, my work is very cerebral in terms of I do a lot of research and I do a lot before I actually physically start making anything. And that same preparation is what I did in teaching. You know, I didn't know how to pull back.
And you began your career as a sculptor.
Yeah, but I don't do that anymore.
You know, you do a lot of installation work.
Right,
now.
Right. Yeah.
I wonder if you have the sense, because you probably do see the world differently from other people, but if you can understand the ways in which you see the world differently from other people.
That's a good question. I don't know. There are a lot of things that have me seeing the world differently than other people. And it's not just the fact that I'm an artist who did a particular type of work. I think that the family I grew up in, the place that I grew up in, the experiences I've been blessed to have as far as my life is concerned, have all given me a sort of different perspective on one, what's possible with people, and two, I guess as caustic as I can be about various and sundry topics, I'm a very optimistic person. You know, I do keep thinking that things can get better and that we can do better and that, you know, there's more out there than there seems to be. So, you know, that has all come from the fact that I grew up in a family where all things were possible, according to my parents.
We're speaking this hour with Vicki Meek. She's retiring this week as manager of the South Dallas Cultural Center after 19 years. We're talking to her about her lifelong career thus far in the arts and what's coming next. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
I think a lot of our problems have stemmed from the fact that we have been kind of a misplaced people and have not made it our business to learn, you know, where we fit and what our contributions have been and what our past lives were. And I think that contributes a lot to a kind of lack of self-confidence, lack of self-image, lack of self-respect that we see so prevalent in many Black communities across the country. So I am concerned about that, and I'm concerned about that from the standpoint of how I, as an artist, can make an impact on, you know, some Black child, some Black adult, whomever is looking at my work, to make them feel good about what they're seeing, and also to make them understand that this was, in fact, derivative from something Black, and it's beautiful.
That was my guest, Vicky Meek, in 1984 in a KERA profile. You're listening to Think. First of all, do you have any memory of doing that profile, of making that statement?
I have a feeling that it had to do with when I did the exhibition here at KERA, maybe, about the work that I had done that they showed. That's in 84. No, it couldn't have been then, because it was 84 was after I'd done that show. So I don't know.
Well, let me ask.
No memory of anything.
Let me ask you this: when you hear that, do you think that African Americans, in particular in Dallas, have a better sense today of their history, of their contributions to the culture of the city than they did back then?
Well, I'll do a shameless plug and say that the South Dallas Cultural Center children know, our community does. No, I do think that there have been more opportunities for the city itself to experience African-American culture, and therefore African-Americans have had more access through things like the African-American Museum, the South Dallas Cultural Center, Dallas Black Dance Theater, Soul Rep. I mean, there are a number of entities that have contributed to that enlightenment that did not exist, at least not in the way they do today, in terms of having that kind of widespread influence. So I do feel that African-Americans have a lot more accessible historical information about themselves than they ever did when I was here in 80.
When you got to the South Dallas Cultural Center to run the place, it wasn't well-known even within the community where it sits.
Right. I took over in 1997. And I was asked to do so because there was a concern that the center was not really impacting the neighborhood that it sits in, which is South Dallas, across from Fair Park. And I found that to be true. I would have people come in and think that we were the parole office, which is down the street. I mean, no, it's not. I didn't understand why they were thinking that, except that it was a, you know, ugly cinder block building at the time. But I then found out, well, the parole officer was down the street. Mm-hmm. Or they'd say, is this a Social Security office? You know, nobody knew anything about it being a cultural center in the neighborhood. Hmm. And so I felt my challenge was to really make sure that we involved the community surrounding the center in the center, and not just have that building be located there, but, you know, it not really serve the people that are around it.
So what does that mean to involve the community? How did you talk to people about the kinds of programming that would resonate with them and the things that they were hungry for?
Well, Chris, you're probably going to say, oh, you did that? No, I really didn't go about it that way. First off, I have a very strong sense of community development as being what you have to do in order to get people engaged in whatever you're doing. So I knew that I had to get the children hooked into the center, because I knew how I grew up. Mm-hmm. I knew that it was because I had all of this introduced to me from birth, practically, that I became the artist that I became. You know, if I had not had that grounding, I don't know what I would have become. So I felt like if I could get the children into the center, that I could influence a generation of the community, and then they would raise their children up to come to the center, et cetera, et cetera. So I started off by going to Minyard's and hanging out and accosting women who were bringing children into the store. And
this is that Minyards that's right over there.
Yeah. I'm a friendly sort, you know. I can get along with people. So I just asked them, did you ever hear of the South Dallas Cultural Center? You know, that building that sits, and they didn't know what it was. And I said, well, you know what? We have some free programming that I think your kids would like. If you'd bring them over, you know, you might see that they like it. I went to every single PTA meeting of every single school in the area and did the same thing, you know, sat next to parents and just sort of sidled up to them and had conversations about it. And that first year, I had about half of the kids for the summer program were from the neighborhood. The other half were from East Dallas Community School, where I had, you know, come from. And I felt that wasn't a bad compromise, because at least I knew the kids from East Dallas Community School also needed to have this, you know, stuff. By the second year, I had the entire program was South Dallas Cultural Center, was South Dallas Kids. And that is the requirement for the summer program. You have to live and go to school in South Dallas. So, I mean, you know, it's work in terms of getting people in the doors. You have to earn their trust, because no one's turning their child over to somebody they don't trust. And then you have to have something for them. You know, the program that we had was probably the first time those children had anything solid that talked about who they were and, you know, what their history was, in a way that made them really excited and want to learn more.
Do you ever hang on to the things that they produce?
We have permanent murals at the center. They do murals in the summertime related to the topic that they're studying, because it's a 7-cycle program that's teaching African American history through the arts. So we have the murals that are permanent all through the building, and then we have things like the babies made a quilt. And that's up. So yes, yeah, some of the things we hold on to. We try to encourage them to take their art with them, so that they think of it as something valuable that they made.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Brenda on the line in DeSoto. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Ms. Meeks, I would like to thank you for coming to Dallas and bringing the kind of culture and the programs that you brought here. I grew up around here, and this city was at one time really live with music. Some of the greats have come out of the city. Your David Fathead Newmans, Red Garland, people like that that played jazz in the early days. And I was privileged to sit on Sundays when you had sets over there, and I really enjoyed the music.
Oh,
thank you so much
for
being a part of that. And like I say, as quiet as it's kept, nobody ever talks about it. But we've had great people here, Marshall Ivey, all of those people. I just can't say enough good things about what you've done, what you brought, and I hate to see you go.
Oh, I'm not going. I'm not going. I mean, I'm going out of there, but I'll still be around. and I'm going to still support all of those things as well.
You have been really active in developing collaborations and partnerships. What's the difference between one that works on paper and one that really works?
Well, paper collaborations are easy. Mm-hmm. Let's just put it that way. Real collaborations are hard. And we've collaborated with all kinds of organizations and individuals in this city in order to make sure that the programming we want to do gets done. For instance, we've had a long-term collaboration with Teatro Dallas, and that started really before I got to the center. I was on the board of Teatro Dallas. And Cora and I would talk all the time about the interrelationship between Latinos and African Americans, but that the city didn't seem to know that. So we decided we wanted to do some things that would actually bring about some understanding of that thread, that what she calls the third root in Mexico, so that there would be some understanding of how we're connected. That collaboration worked because we were coming from a premise that we both actually embraced and wanted to move that agenda forward. We've also collaborated with the African American Museum. We've collaborated with the Dallas Museum of Art to do our summer program. And that one is an interesting conversation, because when they first started talking to me many years ago about doing this, I think they thought that they were going to come in with a, you know, like a sort of canned activity and, you know, do it for the kids and then go
the boilerplate.
Yeah. And I said, oh, no, we're not doing that. you've got to come and be a part of our planning group, and you've got to see where the museum's collection and activities that you want to do fit in with the theme of what we're doing in our summer program. And it really bumped their game up because, you know, we've done some incredible projects with them, with our kids, related to our topics. And they then had some ideas of things that they could do to take back to the museum for other activities, you know, for other people to do. So those were good collaborations. And I guess for me, a collaboration is when both parties have equal footing in the arrangement, and you don't have one that's got more weight than the other, or you don't have one that gets more notoriety from the collaboration than the other. You've got to be really sensitive about both entities have to have an equal buy-in for it to be a strong collaboration.
What makes a city, what creates a climate within a city that allows artists to stay after they finish their education?
Whoa. Well, for one thing, you have to value them. I mean, you know, we can't be talking about wanting to be an artistic hub and all these, you know, terms I hear thrown around, and the artists can't even afford to live here. Or the artist, their work is not respected in a way that makes them think that they should continue to live here. I mean, if I could get a dime for every time I've been asked to donate my work to something, you know, and I mean, people have no shame. They'll ask me to donate work. An organization has done nothing for me or my community. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that you look around and you go, well, if artists are respected and are appreciated for real, then you do things that help those artists make a living. You don't do things that constantly have them scuffling and, you know, but you're asking them to give back.
What response do you get when you say to people, no, I'm not going to donate my work to you. I need to make a living. Then do you get paid, or do they say, oh, then forget it and hang up the phone?
Usually they say, I don't say it that way. Usually I just say, thank you, but I'm not going to be able to do that. I don't go into a whole lengthy explanation about it.
Unless it sounds like you want to.
Well, if there's somebody who I think needs to know that this is why you don't do that, I will tell them that. You know, it's kind of like my take on Black History Month and why I don't do any activities during Black History Month. You know, it's kind of like I'm Black 365. You know, I can do this any day of the week, any month of the year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that for most people, I don't really take the time to explain it to them because I figure they'll find somebody who will do it, I guess. It's just not going to be me.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Millie in Fort Worth. Hi, Millie.
Hi there. How are you? I'm glowing, Vicki. I'm Millie. And because
I know,
of
Millie.
Anita Knox.
Hi, Millie.
I am so in love with you. And the fact that you took Dallas, South Dallas, through a metamorphosis that has just given an illumination to a collection of artists that I've met. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, by the way, of Denver, Colorado, after going to graduate school there. And I, too, came here very disappointed. But because of people like you and through Anita, she just introduced me to you. You introduced me to so many other rhythms and so many other different art movements and done by African Americans. I want to say thank you.
Well, thanks, Millie. And Anita, you, as you know, was one of my dear friends. She died last year. She taught quilting for us at the center. A fabulous artist. We did several shows of hers at the center. And yes, I was able to meet some wonderful people like Millie, who was over in Fort Worth, through her. And I think that was the most rewarding thing about my association with the gallery at the center, is that I was able to have a relationship with visual artists that probably I would not have had as a single artist out in the world, because I got to meet all kinds of different people doing different things. Because my goal with the gallery was to show how diverse African-American visual artists are, that they don't all do a one type of art, that we do all kinds of things from conceptual to media to traditional And that allowed me to meet a lot of artists that I, like I said, wouldn't have met because of what I do. My work is, you know, a certain kind of work, and I tended to hang out with artists who did that same kind of work, which most artists do. You know, they kind of hang with people who do similar things. Being at the center allowed me to broaden my base as far as understanding what we were all doing out there.
Do you have projects in mind that you've been thinking about working on for a long time, but you had to get something done for a commission or you had to work on an administrative thing? Is there something that you're eager to get started with now?
I'm already started. I'm doing work like crazy. I keep a running log of ideas that I have for installations, for books, for whatever, you know, whatever. And so I'm knocking that list down. I'm starting to knock that list down. I've got a show up right now at Mountain View College, which was an idea that I'd had for a couple of years that I finally was able to realize as an exhibition. That'll be up through March 25th. I'm starting another installation that'll be up in Fort Worth next week. It'll open next week. I'm working on another set of ideas for a possible show in L.A. I mean, it's coming. It's about to happen.
You've said there was a time when you were known strictly as an artist, like in a place like Houston, and yet in Dallas people knew you not strictly as an administrator, but chiefly as an administrator.
Actually, I would even go so far as to say, is there many people in Dallas who have no idea I'm an artist?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because I didn't do my art career here. I really did feel it was a conflict of interest for me to be an active artist here in this city, running the center that I ran. So I intentionally had my life in Texas as an artist be elsewhere. Houston people, they don't know I'm an arts administrator, really. I mean, I think there are a couple people there that know that I ran a cultural center. But most of them know me as an artist because that's how I got introduced to that city. The same thing is true in San Antonio and Austin. Those are the cities in Texas where I've shown and done my work. Of course, I've done work all over the country as well. And, you know, most of those people know me one way or the other.
We're speaking this hour with artist Vicky Meek, retiring as manager of the South Dallas Cultural Center after 19 years. We're talking about her lifelong career in the arts and what comes next. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with artist, curator, educator, and arts administrator Vicky Meek, retiring as manager of the South Dallas Cultural Center. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372. So, Vicky, I take it everywhere you go, people are devastated that you're retiring, but you're only retiring from this one aspect of your creative life.
Absolutely. And that's... I think it's interesting that people think that, you know, as an artist, I would have nothing to do after, you know, it's like, no, I have more stuff to do than I could ever shake a stick at. You know, I've got a lot of things that I had on my back burner that are now on the front, not the least of which is I'm engaged in building a space down in Costa Rica. I have a business partner, Eli Arce, who is a performance artist from Costa Rica. Our idea is to build a space where creative thinkers, not just artists, but creative thinkers can come and just see how being in this space changes, you know, what you're thinking, and then how their thoughts affect our aesthetic.
So help me understand this. Is it like out in nature somewhere, or what is it exactly?
Everything about the Caribbean side is about out in nature, but it's not. I'm not that person.
You're not camping and swinging a hammer.
No,
you're just...
no. But the center that we're building, I'll have a studio space. She'll have a studio space. There'll be a third studio space and possibly a fourth for us to invite other people down. And there'll be a common space where we can have like colloquiums and we can have performances and things of that nature in that space. But then we also will have a relationship with the University of Costa Rica in Limón. And I am particularly interested in the African route in Costa Rica. I've been looking at that for some time. And she is particularly interested in the indigenous people. So, you know, there's some things like that that we're looking at. And then I got invited to do a 3-month artist residency in Berlin in the spring of 2017. So there are a few things I've got planned besides doing my own work. You know, I've got these shows that I'm also working on.
Do you respond well to a deadline?
Yes. Yes. I have to have a deadline, as a matter of fact. Otherwise, I find 5,000 other things that I could be doing. Mm-hmm. So if somebody doesn't set it for me, I set it for myself so that I know that after this date, I have to have X done. Consequently, I'm an artist who most people who've shown my work will tell you that I'm a joy to work with. I don't miss deadlines. I come prepared, and because I've been on the other side of that, so I know what it's like to have a gallery space where artists don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never going to be that artist that is not coming ready to do the work and get it done.
There is that perception that artists somehow are unable to sort of live in the real world and get that sort of thing done, and yet a lot of people who are able to make a living doing art clearly understand the importance of kind of producing what you say you're going to produce.
Well, see, in the world that I live in, I don't know those fictitious artists that don't know how to, you know, get it together. Anybody that's making a living doing art, trust me, they are not only organized, they're hyper-organized, because there's no way in this country that doesn't really support artists to make that happen unless you are somebody who's highly organized and has your stuff together. I decided I didn't want to struggle that hard, which was why I looked for other alternatives to making art as a living. My hat is off to anybody in this country who is actually doing that. My friend Elia Arce is one of those people who pretty much made her living doing performance art and photography and film.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go now to Kaya in Dallas. Hi, Kaya.
Hi, Miss Meek.
Kaya.
I just wanted to speak about how you've affected my life as an artist. I'm a fashion designer, as you know, and now I live in Philly, your hometown.
Yay!
When I met you, I just became friends with Elena, and, you know, I came from the suburbs. I really wasn't exposed to a lot of Black artists, and through knowing her and knowing you and being introduced to the center, I was just introduced to a whole new world of Black artists, Black female artists, and just going to the center after school and on the weekends and all of that. I just started to understand my own power and all of the possibilities that I have as a Black artist, not just in Dallas, but throughout the world. And I have definitely been able to go out and do some things, and I definitely don't know if all of that would have happened if I didn't have you and all of these other strong Black female, you know, influences in my life. And I'm just so thankful for you and your boundless energy and influence and everything that you've done. I'm so excited to see what you do next.
Oh, thank you, Kaya.
How much do you think, you know, Kaya's point is interesting. She said she came from the suburbs. Mm-hmm. When you were working with the South Dallas Cultural Center, was there a dividing line between thinking, okay, this is really for this community that needs this place, and then also thinking this is a great way to sort of bring in people from other parts of North Texas to have these experiences?
Yeah, I think there was both things going on in my head, but certainly my youth program was targeted at the immediate community, but the Saturday classes were targeted at all of North Texas. And that, and actually the Saturday classes have people coming from all over North Texas. It's not restricted to the immediate community. Marilyn Clark, who's my education and outreach coordinator, she's always said to me, you know, those kids in the suburbs are just as ignorant as the ones around the center. We need to reach out to all of them. And I encourage, because I know that the parents of these suburban kids have the wherewithal to bring them in and do things with them, and whereas some of my parents may not have the same financial resources, I encourage parents all the time. I mean, it's your job to find these resources for your children. If you think your children don't have any sense of who they're, you know, what their history is, then you need to find those resources within the community that will help them see that. And we're there, and we've been there. You know, the center's been there for, it'll be 30 years in June. And the African American Museum is there. So, you know, there are places where they can get that knowledge. And I just think that, you know, it's one of those things where they need to take the initiative and do it. But I think of all of the, I think of all of our children as needing this information, and all of our people as needing this information. It's not just the neighborhood.
You were on a panel not too long ago talking about the future of Fair Park. And ooh, I gather it's not the first conversation you've had about this. And you left frustrated.
Well, I didn't.
It was reported that you left frustrated.
Who said that? No, I just left thinking, you know, yet another conversation about Fair Park that really isn't about the stuff that I care about Fair Park. You know, it's like the conversation that I want to hear is the one that talks about the value of the neighborhood that exists right now around that park that doesn't get served by that park, that isn't considered when they start talking about major development of that park. I mean, you know, that's the conversation I want to have. And I want to have it with people who are serious about doing that, as opposed to using the rhetoric around that conversation and then doing something totally different. So, yeah, yet another conversation about Fair Park, whatever.
Let's go back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. We'll speak this time with Morgan in Dallas. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'm an artist and a student, and I'm studying art education, and I was wondering what your advice would be for a future art educator, maybe one of the biggest impacts that you created, and what you would really advise for that.
Well, you know, having been an art educator and still really am, I would say the best thing that you can do is to expose your students to as much as you possibly can in the community that you're in. I taught art history at Booker T. Before it was Booker T, it was Arts Magnet at that time. And it was before they had a real structured art history program. And I felt like the way to teach art history for me was to take those students out of the school to artist studios so that the artists could talk to them about how art has influenced, how the history of art has influenced what they do. And it was so much more of a sticking kind of piece of information that they got than they would have gotten from a book and looking at slides. So you have to be innovative in terms of what you do with students as far as the teaching of art, because it can become, I'm going to just tell you this. When I was in school and I went through 4 years of undergraduate school and 3 years of graduate school to get my MFA, and I had 1 year when art history seemed to make sense as far as what I was doing as an artist. And that was the year I studied abroad, because that teacher, she taught art history by taking us to everything we ever saw in a history book as opposed to ever showing us anything in a history book. And all of that made an impact. She knew all about the artists' personal lives, and, you know, they were all very colorful and exciting. And that's the stuff that stuck. Everything else seemed to be, I don't know, something that was abstract from being an artist. So I would say the more you can energize your students with real experiences with art, the better.
Where were you studying abroad?
What?
Where did you study abroad?
Oh, Tyler School of Fine Arts had a school. It's now Temple Abroad, but at the time it was Tyler School of Fine Arts Abroad. And it was in Rome.
It was in Rome. Okay. Do you go back often?
To Rome?
To Rome?
No. No. I did Europe, and that was it. That was enough for me.
But you do have travel planned in your future. Mm-hmm. Do you think you will look at the places that you go to in a different way, having had the experiences that you've had, now that you're going as an artist? Will you sort of look at the people who are administering arts there in a different way? Or I don't know what kind of interaction you'll have with them.
I'm not really clear what kind of interaction I'm going to have with them either. At this moment, I'm going as an artist to come up with a project of my choosing that I want to do. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about similar things to what I do anyway, in terms of memory and historical reclamation and things of that nature, of what my work is about. So I've been actually exploring this notion of going to Berlin and looking at the Africans who are living in Berlin, who are coming from countries that were once colonized by Germany, and just understanding at what point does the cultural disappearance begin to happen for that person who now is living in the land of the colonizer. And so I'm toying with those kinds of notions. So I don't know how much connection or even whether I'll cross paths with too many arts administrators.
Yeah.
I know that I'm going to be around some people who are from, I believe she said, the person that invited me said, I think they're coming from Kenya and someone else from Tanzania maybe. And then someone from some other Eastern European country. So, you know, I'll have some interactions with some artists who are doing totally different experiences than I would be doing. But I don't know about administrators. I don't even care if I ever go around any administrators anymore. I've had enough of administrators.
So this is a big weekend of events. Is there one in particular that you're excited about?
Yep. There's the big one on Sunday. But the one that I'm actually, and I should probably not say this because everybody might not come to the big one. But Saturday morning, by invitation, it's my alumni from my summer program. So all my kids who are now grown-ups themselves, and I'm on, you know, their kids are now in the program, we're coming together to have breakfast at Buzz Brews.
And surely that's meaningful because you can sort of see the impact that you've had. What does it mean to you to have had, you know, have made a difference, as you said in that quote from 1984? What does it mean to have made a difference in somebody's life?
Well, it's not egotistical, I don't think, to say that the one thing I wanted to do was to make an impact on these children's lives in a way that would allow them to go forward and do big things, you know, to be really settled and satisfied with who they are as people. And I see my young people, and they're not, they're all in their 20s now, and you know, some are 30. I see them doing things in the community, doing positive things in the community, raising families with kids that are just wonderful little kids. That makes you, it's like a parent, really. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much like a parent, you know, when you feel like you've done a good job with your kids. That's how I feel about my students who have come through the South Dallas Cultural Center and my families that have come through the South Dallas Cultural Center. I'm just as proud as of their parents because they didn't have to keep them there, and they did.
Artist, curator, and educator Vicky Meek has been manager of the South Dallas Cultural Center for 19 years. This month, she retires from the position. Vicky, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I loved it.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy, with help on the phones today from Gus Contreras. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.